Hank was asleep in a dingy jail cell when he was awakened by the guard bringing in another prisoner, a big, burly guy with a bandage on his head. He was griping about having to share a cell with a rapist. The new guy flopped down on the other cot and breathed that heavy kind of breath one associates with bears, dragons, and monsters. Hank just prayed, "Lord, please deliver me." Rafar strutted back and forth on his hilltop overlooking the town, his wings trailing like a regal cape behind him.
"Courier, take word to the strong man that all is ready and that he may come at his will. The obstacles are removed. Rafar has completed his task, and the town of Ashton is ready to fall into his hands like a ripe plum."
The saints, aroused by Hank's arrest and urged on by the Spirit of God, went to fervent prayer. As a result, from north, from south, from east and west, heavenly warriors continued to gather in the town, ready and waiting. Hank and the big stranger sharing his cell hadn't exchanged a word all morning. Things changed at lunch. Hank asked the guard for a Bible, and the guard ignored him. Suddenly, the big man burst out.
"Jimmy, you've got a stack of Gideon Bibles in your desk drawer, and you know it. Now give the man a Bible."
The guard only sneered. "Hey, you're on that side of the bars now, Hogan. I'll run the show out here."
Well, the guy seemed to be on Hank's side. Hank extended his hand. "Hank Bush?" The man took his hand and gave it a firm shake.
"Marshal Hogan."
"Say, aren't you..."
"You're the pastor of that little church.
And you're the editor of the Clarion.
So you've crossed Alf Brummel and his friends, huh?"
Well, yes.
"So have I. That's why we're here. Tell me, do you even know this girl you supposedly raped?"
"Well, where'd you get those bite marks on your arm?" I better not say anything.
"Was her name Carmen?"
Hank's face said a yes that was almost audible.
"Treacherous gal. She used to work for me."
"How do you know about all this?"
"Hank, have I got a story for you."
"Well, I might have one for you, too." Marshall went first, starting at the beginning when Bernice was arrested. By the time he finished his whole story, including the heart-wrenching breakup of his family, Hank was having a religious experience, exulting in the Lord with tears in his eyes.
"Marshall, this is of God. Our enemies meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. You haven't heard my story yet, but guess what? It's the same. We've both been coming up against the same problem, but from opposite sides."
Miraculously, with special assistance she didn't realize was angelic, Bernice made it to the town of Baker and took time to rest and eat at a small cafe just down the road from the Evergreen Tavern. Then at 7:30, with what little nerve she had left, she slipped in the back door of the Evergreen Tavern and blended in with the noisy crowd, almost unable to see through sunglasses that hid her blackened eyes. Nonchalantly, she moved about the place looking for that mysterious, ghosty-looking woman she'd seen so long ago at the carnival. Then she noticed the bartender pulling the front window shades down. Uh-oh. Was that a signal?
It was a signal.
Right away, two uniformed police burst in through the front door. Where was that back door? In the dark, in this crowd, with her sunglasses on, she wasn't sure she could even find it.
"Hey, stop that woman! Police, hold it!"
She burst through the back door and dashed into the woods. She could hear the shouts of her pursuers. They didn't seem to know which way she'd gone. She kept running until she broke out of the woods again and came to a back road. Now which way? She looked back. A figure was running behind her in hot pursuit. "Oh, God, help me!" She came to an old barn and found the door. She practically fell through it. Inside was inky blackness. She ducked into one of the stalls and tried to quell her gasping. The steps of her pursuer slowed, moving cautiously into the barn. Bernice touched a handle. She felt downward. A pitchfork. She took it in her hands. The pursuer was checking every stall. Bernice could see a small beam of light sweeping here and there. The light shined in her eyes. There was a gasp. "Come on, Bernice, throw the pitchfork." Her arms would not move.
"Bernice Krueger."
Bernice still didn't move. She held the pitchfork high.
Bernice, no, don't throw it. It's Susan Jacobson. I'm alone.
Bernice was irrational with fear and words meant nothing.
Who are you? Susan Jacobson, your sister Pat's old roommate. We had an appointment.
Susan shone her little penlight on her own face. The black hair and pale complexion were unmistakable. Bernice lowered the pitchfork, and then she dropped it, letting out a muffled wail, her hand over her mouth. She suddenly realized she was in terrible pain.
You're hurt. I try to keep everything in perspective. I'm still alive. I found the real, live Susan Jacobson. I haven't had to kill anybody. The police haven't found me. And I have a cracked rib.
Susan put her arms around her.
Oh, gently, gently. Where did you come from? How did you find me?
I was watching the tavern from across the street, and I saw the police chasing you.
I used to think I'd never seen a miracle, but now I don't know.
As the two women sat there in the straw in the dark, Bernice tried to explain everything to Susan, her battered face, her cracked rib, what she and Marshall had been through, and the death of Kevin Weed. Susan digested it for a moment and then replied,
"It's Kasif's way. It's the society's way. I shouldn't have brought Kevin into this. But I can't think about that now. We have to move. Can you walk?" "No, but that hasn't stopped me yet."
Susan helped Bernice along, and they made their way back across the field to Susan's rented car.
"Susan!"
said a voice from the woods. They froze.
"Susan Jacobson!" "I don't believe it. I don't believe it either. Kevin?"
A man stepped out of the woods, and there was no mistaking that lanky frame and that lazy walk.
"Kevin Weed? Bernice Krueger! You made it! Oh, that's great!"
"Let's get out of here," said Susan.